You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Don, I know you'll agree with this, but we thought, as the probably the most interesting year we've ever experienced since we've been on the planet is about to come to an end, who better would we speak to than a man who has been across every facet of this industry, sport, politics, media, every aspect of life that you can imagine, and we'll ask him, or his impressions about what's gone on and what is about to happen. I'm saying, if you can tell me a better on-air presenter and performer than this man who does it off the top of his head, no idiot sheets, no cue cards, no rehearsal. I know this for a fact. And he cops plenty because he is good at what he does. And I thought we'll get him on the line and we'll ask him what he sees about this year that's just finishing and what he sees about the future. And that's exactly, we'll ask him about his future. And we're going to ring him now. His name's Eddie Maguire and we're going to get him on the line and see if he'll take the call. He should take the call because I asked him, would he take the call?
Hello.
Aha. It is Sam and Don on You Cannot Be Serious, Ed, and thanks very much for taking the call.
Not since Mike Munro walked in on This Is Your Life have I been so surprised.
No, I just did say I'd tried to arrange this with you, and we never know until we ring if someone's going to answer the phone or if the line gets through, so you've answered it. So just tell us, you're down at your seaside residence, unwinding after probably the worst year that we can ever remember for various reasons. How is it going down there where you are?
Going all right, Sam and Don. Good to be with you, mate. I actually... I've had a good week. I sat next to a couple of your old teammates and friends, Ray Wilson and Gareth Andrew, at the Boxing Day Test, and they were waxing lyrically about both of you guys. So it was good to catch up with friends at the cricket, and good to be at a sporting event, to be perfectly honest. But down here, it's been a good day. It's VCE Day for those out there in Year 12 land, and my son's got through, so I've got both boys through high school.
Xander got through?
He got through, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, so
he should be right to get into the course he wants to do, so well, all clear.
Well, what's he want to do, Ed?
He's an interesting young fella. Don, he'll probably want to go and do an undergraduate either here in Australia and then possibly go overseas and do a postgraduate over there, but probably in the humanities and possibly in law in down the track, but... He's a pretty open book. He's got a fair bit going for him. He's a smart young fella.
So who does he follow? Who's got the brains, his mother or father?
Clearly mum, because she married me. But no, she's it's an interesting one. I've been contemplating this morning. And, you know, we're talking about a hard year, Sam, and things like that. But, you know, this country, Australia, of which my family's been here for 5 minutes, you know, my dad was in a coal mine when he was 14 in Glasgow, and my mum was dragged out of school when she was 12 in a third world situation in Southern Ireland. And in one generation, you know, suddenly you've got two boys going to, you know, Melbourne University and the world's their oyster in academia. It just shows you the opportunities this country still gives. Now
you're underselling yourself here, my friend, because what intrigues me about you is that you say you grew up in Broadmeadows, but I don't understand why you went to school in CBC in St Kilda. So you must have won a scholarship.
I did, yeah, I did.
Well, you're not an idiot.
No, not at all. No, but I think that's sort of the point I'm making is that neither were my parents, and their opportunity was one that was thwarted by economic situations, even sectarianism, and more to the point, you know, world wars. And they came out here, Dad was in his 40s when they came out here with two kids. I was lucky enough to be the first one born in Melbourne, out in Broadie. But the opportunities were always there if you looked them out. And so scholarships were available. And, You know, I remember grade six was probably the definitive year for me, believe it or not. As a 12-year-old, had a good year playing sport, but I had this old Irish nun, Sister Matthew. He used to set the classroom work up for me, just for me, because she knew I had this exam in March, and the year before, the school year hadn't been great at the school, and we had some family health issues and all sorts of things, economic issues. It was pretty tight at one stage there. And, you know, from that moment on, it was like winning Willy Wonka's golden ticket. You are there and you're in the race of life, and you could compete and you could see how you're going, and away you went. And things, you know, took off for me. But, you know, I just think this country that provides those opportunities now, and while we do tend to talk ourselves down, even what's happened in the last 12 months has just shown that maybe it's Donald Horne's idea of the lucky country, where he believes we're lucky by pure art, as opposed to lucky by the, you know, maybe it is the grace of whatever God you have. But certainly there is an opportunity here that I think still stands number one anywhere in the world.
Now Ed, Don,
John's makes, tried to get in three times, Ed.
Shut up, Don. Don makes a very good point when he says you're not an idiot. I can attest to that, Ed. You are not an idiot, just in case Don was querulous about that. Now, Ed. The very fact, this is my question, the very fact that you've got Xander and Joe through to the semis without dropping a set, could we say that you are steadily clearing the decks to move on to the final phase of your life, which I've got a feeling, Ed, we ain't seen nothing yet. Do you have aspirations? Now, I'm just asking you this. You probably won't say, I shudder to think the answer you'll give me. You'll tie me up, knock me into a cocked hat. Whether we be a monarchy or a republic, do you set yourself to...
Well, what's your question?
Would you like to be the Prime Minister of this country?
No.
You wouldn't?
I made the decision probably in my 30s, Sam, when we were still doing the footy show, and you mentioned the Republic. I did do the Republican campaign, and you know, I was the number one elected person in the country.
Hence my question, Ed.
But you know what? I learned from that a lot. I went up to Canberra, and just about everybody who went into that forum ended up in politics, from Malcolm Turnbull back. Probably Steve Vizard was the only one who didn't, and that's because Steve ran foul of situations when he was at Telstra. But the bottom line is there. Look, my brother's a politician, and he struggles with the factionalism and that type of thing. You know me, Sam. I'm probably more of an instinct player. I like to, you know, get into things that I'm interested in and I can make a difference in. And I think I can do all those things without being in politics, which I find actually hamstrings you a bit, unless you are possibly the Prime Minister. But, you know, if you have a look at people like even Malcolm Turnbull, who's a good case to study, you know, he became the Prime Minister, but ultimately the factions got him. They got Julia Gillard. And if you can't get in there and actually be the person that you want to be, because of the factionalism, then that is the ultimate frustration. I mean, I was CEO of the Nine Network, and, you know, ultimately you were hamstrung because, you know, suddenly we were selling the station for, you know, $4.5 billion, ended up being $5.5 billion. You know, it was an amazing thing. Great business deal for James, but no good in sort of why I was hired, which was to, you know, be a producer, to come up with shows and really build a business, which was what we were going to do. But then this deal came from nowhere. So, you know, you've got to get your timing right, and you've got to actually have a free run at it. And I find that I'm enjoying doing things. You know, that's why I really enjoyed being president of Collingwood. I could do the things socially, i.e. the homeless housing and, you know, what we do on Christmas Day and our Indigenous programs and things like that, that you probably can't unless you've got that portfolio. So the answer is no, Sam.
You're probably echoing and finding out what Donald Trump couldn't beat, and that's the factions of United States politics.
I think that's, you know, look, that's what we've got. We've got a representative system, and, you know, usually you've got a landslide of 52%, which means 48% of the country don't like you to start with, and then within your own party, they've got about four or five different factions. So, you know, you're whittling down your power base pretty quickly, and there's a lot of other people that need to be nursed along.
So, okay.
So that probably frustrates me in the political system.
So you just said then that you only get do things that you embrace and enjoy doing. But I noticed, and you mentioned Collingwood, one of them, but I see now that you're stepping back from that next year. I'm still thinking you're clearing the decks for something.
I am clearing the decks, but I'm not quite sure what exactly, Sam. I think you and I have had long discussions over this over the years. And yeah, I mean, your instinct is right. I have set myself to get the boys through school, and they've done that now, so they're young men in their own right. And, you know, as Carla often says, you know, the Collingwood thing, that wasn't in the brochure when I proposed. So there's other things to be done there as well. But
Collingwood? You're saying things to be done?
No, just in my life, Don. I mean, Collingwood. I'm going to spend the next 12 months. I'd given assurances to sponsors and you know, governments and things that I would implement things that will take the next 12 months. And I want to make sure that it's absolutely tip top when I hand it over. So the other thing, of course, is that I was probably going to do this earlier in the year, but the COVID situation came in and cleaned us up. And look, the AFL situation, and, you know, if you get Jeff Kennett on, he'll feel the same way. It's very hard if you are running one of the bigger clubs these days. Even if you're running well, the money gets taken off you. And, you know, sometimes you get frustrated that you might actually be, you know, you're raising money for the opposition and you're judged as if it's a level playing field. And it's not. But we need to do that to keep the competition thriving, particularly through COVID. But certainly when you start the year at minus $4 million on your salary cap and other clubs are at plus eight, it makes it harder and can make it a bit frustrating. That's not the sole reason, but after 23 years, you start to, you know, even I get sick of hitting my head against the same wall after a fair while. So they're the frustrations. The joy has been everything else.
So just on Collingwood, because you're good at what you do, and because the media love the clickbait effect of what you do and other people do. Were you satisfied that you separated the top office from the bottom office at Collingwood? Or if you are in charge of the whole system, you should actually have an input into everything that goes on in that club.
What do you mean by top office from bottom office?
Well, it's people who run the club and other people who go out and find the players that you require. Usually that's not left to a president to... he has a committee that go and sort out who they need. But I've got a feeling, Ed, that you either are in it or you're not in it, and they're going to survive or fall on your expertise, and that's the way you've run things there.
Not necessarily, Sam. And look, it ebbs and flows. You know, for a number of years, I've played it as break glass in case of emergency, and those times have happened. But we've had great people. I mean, you have a look at people like Jeff Walsh, who's been running the football department. He's run the football department. You know, we've had, you know, CEOs in their times, you know, it was 2 years of it, I was in Sydney. So there's a lot made because of my notoriety, if you like, because I'm in the media. And as you say, if they can get a headline, we know that, you know, you and I are two of the best clickers in the caper. And that is now a bona fide way of making money if you're a journalist, particularly at News Limited. So that's just the way it is. That's a statement of fact. There's no rancor involved in that. That's just the way it is. So at times, you know, you start to think, well, hang on, this is starting to become bigger than it needs to be, and is it counterproductive? Look, 23 years, I think by the time I get through, somebody told me the other week that by the time I get through round two or three, I'll have been at more football games for president than anyone in the history of game. So at 56 years of age, you're right, it does give me an opportunity to look at doing other things. It's been a labour of love. I've got more out of it. And to be honest, Don and Sam, you both understand this in football clubs. If you get the opportunity to walk out the door still fully in love with the place and in love with the game after the period that I've been involved in the game, and there's been, you know, there's been bark lost along the journey and plenty of hand wringing and hair pulling and all the rest of it. But if you can still walk out with that attitude after everything this game has provided for me, and my family, for somebody who didn't actually play the game at a senior level, then I'm going to be pretty lucky. So the next 12 months is going to be all about trying to set the place up as best I possibly can to hand over for somebody to take on and just run with it. And, you know, I think we've got a good list. It might be, you know, maybe the ultimate, the irony will be if when I go, we might clean up. We might start winning even more premierships, which would be fantastic. And there'll be nobody celebrating more than me.
How many challenges did you thwart in your time at Collingwood, Ed?
None.
Not one person came to you and said, Ed, you should move aside.
No. The last couple of years, Don, a couple of people said, when do you think? Have you planned these things? And as Sam would know, I plan a long way ahead and don't tell anybody anything. That's what my father told me. Tell no one nothing. And that's the way I've always done it. And that's why, despite, as I said, 23 years there, it came as a surprise because I'd worked out when it was. I wanted to tell our members. I'm strongly of the belief that this wasn't a story to be done in the papers or in one of my outlets or anything else like this. The people who I represent are the members of the Collingwood Football Club. I walked in and was unanimously voted in on the 29th of October 1998 and have stood in seven three-year terms since then, unopposed. There's not been one election at Collingwood in my time there other than the first year.
And when you walked in, Ed, when you walked in, they were about to hit the wall financially, weren't they?
Well, it was one of those situations, Sam, that, you know, you have a look at some of the great clubs, including our three, Geelong, Hawthorn and Collingwood, at that particular stage, were in all sorts of trouble. And each of us have played a role at various stages in that. And, you know, as a role, you're not the total person. But, yeah, but I think what happened at our place at Collingwood is that the game had moved on. The footy show phenomena had come through and Collingwood had been left behind in that situation. So that's why, in the next 12 months, it gives an opportunity for people who might have aspired or had ideas or a directional change at Collingwood to step up and for us to have a good look at people and make that decision. Because I think what happens a lot in these football clubs, now you have a look at, you know, John Olsen's become the president of Adelaide Crows. He's 75 years of age. Now, a fantastic bloke, former premier, set up Say Good Day USA, just a wonderful person. Whereas I think Collingwood needs to be a club that continually upgrades. Now, when I became the president, it was the most left-field presidency ever. You know, 33-year-old bloke hosting the footy show alongside Sam, and from the media, taking over in a bloodless coup, you know, one of the most famous clubs in the country. So we need to look at what we've got there. We've got really good people on the board. People always talk about, oh, is there a succession plan? Any one of the Collingwood board members could step up and be president of Collingwood. And there's probably a half a dozen others are out there who would like to talk about it, and there's probably another three or four that I want to talk to get them inspired. So we have to, you know, get the right people. But you know, football clubs and football commissions, and even the cricket and all sorts of sporting things, we don't want to just load them up like we have in corporate Australia with the same names all the time with the same skill sets. You know, the world's changing quickly. The digital world is upon us, and we have to make sure that we've got people who actually know where the world's going, not where it's been.
So Ed, now I've mentioned this before you came on, before we got you on the line. Your CV is extensive. I don't know of any other person in the business anywhere in the world that has an extensive CV as you. So just on another part of your life, you've done the hot seat and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is now the hot seat for, just tell me how long you've been doing that.
I think it was 99 we started.
Okay.
Sam, yeah.
21 years. It must have been, it's an amazing journey because it's an extraordinarily, well, have to be popular to last the distance. And you must have asked questions and encountered people on that show that you thought, what behind the scenes could you tell us? Has there ever been any ructions or frictions or angst between the contestants or the quizmaster or... How many questions do you reckon you've ever asked people?
Yeah, there's somebody who knows those answers, and I'll probably know them in the next couple months because we're actually bringing back the original show back into prime time in late January this year.
Do people know this?
Yeah. It's just starting to come out, Sam. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
oh, geez, well, so the might be breaking some news here if we can get it to air quickly. This.
So that'll be coming back partly because the tennis was pushed into January. Into February. So we'll be coming back with some specials. But Jeremy Clarkson and Jimmy Kimmel in England and the United States, respectively, have brought back the original format. And it's still one of the great formats in world TV. I mean, you know, I was very lucky that they picked me out as a young bloke to do that. That was usually, you know, I know that it was, you know, the established stars at Nine were all vying for it. But I got the nod, and that's just been a wonderful experience. You know, I like doing shows that go a long time, Sam. The footy show lasted a fair while, and I was at Triple M for a long time, and Millionaire in Collingwood, and And even my marriage has survived. I don't know which one's the luckiest one there, but anyway. But so be a millionaire. So my answer is, yeah, we're going to have a celebrity special. And I remember you, of course, Sam, when you're in the chair.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up. I think I'm the first person ever to have gone out on the first question. The first question being, who was the first president of the United States? And I think I said Abraham Lincoln.
Well, you didn't go out there because you looked at me and said, that would be Link, wouldn't it, Ed? And I said, well, I'd better have another look. And you got Washington out eventually. So, mate, you got through. And so that was fun. I mean, the only time that we've had any there's a couple of quick anecdotes. One was a guy who actually won the $1 million, Martin Flood. And it wasn't long after the dramas in England with the coughing and the major over there. And this guy was approaching it so differently than anybody I'd ever seen. That, like, for example, I'd say, what colour's the Geelong Football Club? Blue and white, green and white, et cetera, et cetera. And he would start with C. He'd look at it and go, pink and white, pink and white, pink and white, black and white, brown and gold, brown and gold. And then with a second to go, to lock in blue and white, or lock in A. And he'd go, geez, where'd that come from? And he did this all the way through. Anyway, so we got to the end of the show, and he was a carryover champion. By this stage, he'd got to the 32,000, so in his mind, he believed he'd won. What we then found out, having checked him to see if he actually had a wire or a phone attached to his calf that was ringing or buzzing or anything.
So you did that, did
you? Yeah, I did, and it was at my call, because I'm sitting literally, a metre off him, and I'd never seen anything like this. So I'm honing right in on him, and I'm watching people in the crowd, and it just was so completely different to anything that I'd ever seen. Anyway, what happened was we find out that he had taken a year off work, and he had studied me, he'd studied the questions, he'd studied every question in the world, every DVD version of it, you name it, and he worked out the categories and everything. So by the time of the 30, when he came back the second night, again, he was a different guy. He was just then playing for the money, because in his mind, he'd actually justified himself, got the 32, got the $64,000 question, and then he just powered on, and he was there to win the $1 million. So many people come on; they're not there to win $1 million. They're there either not to make a tick of themselves, or to win some money. This guy wanted to win the $1 million, and he was sensational. The second night on, he was, as I said, a completely different person, and was dynamite. The other one, which was an interesting one, was we got a guy on who was I think we call them God botherers these days, Sam and Don, and he believed God was sitting on his shoulder and giving him the answers this night, and. He turned around to his wife, who was in the crowd at one stage when he was, when I asked him if he was going to answer the question. He said, "Wife, what do you think?" And she said, "Husband, you are the head of our household." And the crowd were booing. It was quite amazing what was going on. And when he turned around, he was very pious looking, Sam and Don. When he turned back, the gambling bug had bit him and bit him severely. Anyway, he got it wrong and dropped down to 32,000. I think he was playing for 250,000 at this stage. And it was the only time I've ever gone backstage, because I was actually genuinely worried that he thought that maybe his God had forsaken him at the moment. This was going to be his moment to show the world by winning that his God was the righteous God, and he was the vessel to tell the world how to go about it. And anyway, he was in the rooms afterwards, and he actually half had a crack at me. He said, you tempted me. And I said, oi, listen, pal. And I gave it to him. A little bit between the eyes, just a little bit of friendly advice, Sam, as you've seen metered out over the journey.
Yes.
And he pulled his head in, and I told him that his wife was a great support for him, and that he should be thankful and thank his Lord that he's got 32,000 in his pocket, which he pulled his head in a bit and then moved on. But it was a really interesting social dynamic that this guy really, as we got going, the more he opened up about his religious or his spiritual connection, and the more he actually believed that this was his day. And it was quite amazing just watching it unfold in front of me.
Ed, your life, you went from entertainment into a managerial role at Nine. How did you adjust when you finished the managerial role? Were you right at the crossroads? Did you have to reinvent yourself? Did you have to get out and work again? Was there anything on the horizon?
Really good question, Don. One that probably hasn't been explored, and one that I'm still sort of ruminating over some 15 years or 14 years later. And what I did was I came back straight away. I think the thing that kept me in the game was I was still president of Collingwood. But I then threw myself into doing breakfast radio, which I'd long given up and long put in the, I've done that and did it for a long time and that's enough of it. And what I did is I came back and Triple M came to me and they were the bottom of the ladder. And I thought, right, okay, here's my way. I'm going to take...
So you approached Triple M?
No, they came to me and had a chat to it. And I thought, right, okay, I'm going to take this over and I'm going to not be given a parachute in. I'm not going to be handed something. I'm not going to have people say, oh, you know, they're giving him a cushy run back into it or, you know, the pension off. And, you know, and I was parked for a while and I went from their quotes, Eddie everywhere to Eddie nowhere. And I was getting maligned that I was getting paid a sizable pay packet to do nothing and all that sort of routine, which, of course, hit me hard for somebody who, you know, prides himself on working for every dollar. And so I got stuck into it again and we started there. And oddly enough, funnily enough, the show we're just talking about, Millionaire, they decided the Millionaire Hot Seat because they needed something to fill in for 3 weeks in December. And it took off. And here we are, what's that, 12 years later, still doing Millionaire. So we got that one to work, and then the radio took off, and a few other things started going, and you know, the Pies enjoyed a good run as well. We, you know, got up and won the premiership in 2010 and made preliminary finals in the 2 years before that. So things were starting to move again. But to your point, Don, yeah, I was angry. I probably look back now and think I should have had a year off. The kids were the right age to go overseas and freshen up, but sort of it's not really my DNA, if you like. I was eager to get back into the fight, and it might have been a bit you know, a bit punchy at that stage, but it certainly it worked in my favour as it turned out. But okay. You know, if all things being equal, I probably would have had a year off and refreshed and done all that sort of stuff. But I came back home and wanted to get straight back into it, and did.
Okay, now how do you balance your life? Because looking from the outside in, you seem to balance it pretty well. You've got a family that's together. You've got a business career. I don't know where you find the time, but there's got to be a formula and there's got to be a reason why it's working.
Well, the times that it hasn't worked has been when I've overdone it. I used to say to Sam, you know, when we used to have our deep and meaningfuls over a glass of red at the Stokehouse, that I'd rather hit the wall than die wondering where it was. But then I hit the wall a couple of times, and it wasn't a pleasant
feeling.
What do
you mean you hit the wall? Tell me about that.
I was physically right. And mentally spent at one stage, and that's when I made the a faux pas, if you want to call it, or I actually said something I wasn't even thinking of in the Adam Goods situation. And I'd been out that night before raising money for Indigenous scholarships, believe it or not, and I was I had a medical condition, and I kept going because I was adamant that I didn't want people ringing up having a crack at Adam, and I did that for 2 days and supported him that he, no man, and particularly no man of colour, should be insulted and the word ape, et cetera, et cetera. And as I've spoken about this before, that in my mind, which was at 1 minute to the news, and I drifted off and I was thinking of, in the old days, on the Don Lane show, Bert Newton would come out, you know, dressed in a jumper and blah, 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 you know, and in thinking, how far have we come? It came out the wrong way. I didn't even realise. We went to the news break. My producer came in and said, do you know what you just said, or are you aware of what you just said? I said, what are you talking about? And Luke Darcy said, better go and have a listen to it. So I went back, had a listen to it, came back off the news, apologised and retracted immediately. And then, it got its own life and it took off. Now, that happened a couple of times later, not later so much, but, you know, later in your life, where you couldn't maybe do it the way you used to do it, where you just powered through. So that was it. So my advice to people these days is if you are tired and if you are under pressure in these situations, have the morning off.
You haven't answered my question, because I sometimes look at you at the football and your boys are with you. How do you balance your domestic life with your business life, your football life and all the rest of it?
Don, it's like everything. You decide what you want to have. What's the main thing in your life? And if a lot of people say their family is the main thing, and it's not. It might be something else. It might be their business career. It might be their sporting career. It might be their social life or whatever. So as Sam would know, I'm a member of more golf clubs and games I've played in the last 10 years. So I decided that for me, the three pillars of my life at that stage or to this stage has been family, business and the footy. And that was enough to go around for everyone else. So you do that. So Carla, to her credit, said, right, okay, we won't be going skiing or anything during the winter. We go to the footy. We're a footy family. And she committed to my passion. Now, she follows the footy. She loves all the boys, but it's not necessarily her abiding passion. I think one of the things she'll look forward to in the next period of time is not having to beat the footy every week. But we did that as a family because it meant a lot to me to be able to do the things I wanted to do at Collingwood to make the club what I hoped it would become.
Yeah.
And so that was it. They're the things you do, and other things fall by the wayside. Some of those things have been done: sleep, social life, even sporting pursuits, and possibly at times even your health.
Now, Ed, finally, just you probably won't ever see Ross Stevenson on the road at 3 a.m. in the morning again, because you must just wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, just out of habit.
How long? I am still. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you won't miss that. Could you tell us who you think should succeed you, or who you think will succeed you at Collingwood?
No, because I'm going to be involved in that, Sam. And what I want to do is, as I said, there's great people on our board who could walk in and do it tomorrow. But I want to open it up to see what's available. I think some of the things that happen, particularly in Australia and particularly in Melbourne, is it becomes a very cliched closed book, and that's probably served me because, you know, for a long period of time everyone says, all right, we need someone to get him. So what I want to do is maybe look around. That doesn't mean the person who I'm thinking of just comes in as the president straight away, but I'd like to get some new faces on the board, just as I was when I was, as I said, 33 coming into the place. So there's a really good opportunity for us to sit down over the next 12 months as a club and really set up what we want to do for the club going forward, get the right people in place. And then, of course, it goes to the members and they ratify it. But if we can do the hard work for the members and put together a good team, then that'd be great. But the people we've got there at the moment on the board, as I said, all of them are just really dynamic business people. And, it annoys me at times that people try to make out that it's a one-man band. Yeah, of course, I've played a significant role there as the president and in the style of presidency that I've done. But there's plenty of other people who've done a lot of heavy lifting and have given sage advice and put a lot of work and time effort into the club. So the players will be right. Whether I was run over by a tram or whether I had took a 12-month period to wind things up, the Maggies will be right. And they're a pretty big club before I got there, and they'll be a big club after I go.
Well, Ed, we really appreciate you speaking to us on the last day of this unusual year. And I'm not sure what you're going to do. I'd have no idea, but I got a feeling we're going to be gobsmacked when we find out. You didn't hear me introduce you by design. You are the best in the business, and I fervently believe that whether I knew you or not. So you're a great friend of mine, and I really appreciate you coming on and speaking to us in this last day of 2020.
Get on your boys, and Don, I hope to maybe see you down at the Sorrento Sharks next year.
You're going to go down. You're coming down.
Mate, I'm a sponsor of the club.
I know, but we haven't seen you. You can. Everybody goes, but you.
I did. John, I used to get me down for I've given three keynote speeches down there over the journey, but I'd love to get down there, and hopefully in the next period of time I'll get a bit more chance to do so. So I think it's in so many ways it goes back to the essence of what footy's all about down there at the local clubs, and I'd love to come back and
stand on the hill with the rest of us, Ed.
That's it, exactly. Well, there's got to be a VIP section, honestly.
drink cards. All right, Ed. Thank you so much.
Boys.
All the best.
Get on you, fellas. Have a great 2021.
Get on you. Bye.
See you, boys.